Turns are pretty.
That's great.
Save
time. Welcome, everyone. The what is it? Senate File 657. The Conference Committee on Senate File 657 will come to order. The Energy Stimulus Bill. Welcome, everyone, and good morning. Why don't we start briefly by doing quick introductions in case Senate and House members don't all know each other. You never know. We're missing one Senate member, but hopefully Senator Kubley will be here soon. I'm Senator Ellen Anderson, and from St. Paul Falcon Heights is my district. Why don't we go around this way, and then we'll do the House side.
Don Jurevsky, Senator Ellen Anderson's office.
John Fuller, Senate Counsel.
Steve Dill, State Senator from Dassel.
Yvonne Kretner-Solon, State Senator from Duluth.
Kendi Rummel, State Senator from White Bear Lake.
Allison Pinebrook, Senator Anderson's L.A.
And I'm Representative Jeremy Kalin from Chisago County.
Bobby Leaf, House Research.
Andy Pomeroy, House Energy Finance and Policy, CA.
Jenny McNamara from Hastings.
Brita Saylor, Park Rapids.
Kathy Breinart, Mankato.
Bobby Champion, Senate District 58B, which is the southern part of North Minneapolis, the Warehouse District, and half of downtown Minneapolis.
Very good. Welcome, everyone.
And Madam Chair, I'm glad that Representative Champion can join us at the table, and I apologize, Representative Champion. We just overlooked the he's the sixth conferee. As you know, building capacity on the House side, as the Speaker has been doing, and glad to have you here, and we'll make sure we get you your nameplates by the end of the day.
Well, thank you so much. It's okay to forget my name tag. Just don't forget the wonderful ideas that I want to put into this wonderful bill.
Okay, so we'll have enough copies for everyone. Okay. All right. Members, we have a slight glitch with the side-by-side we're trying to figure out. There was a last-minute change, and it doesn't appear in the side-by-side, apparently. So we're getting the new corrected version, which is semi-correct, to pass out soon. The difference is, and I mentioned this in a stakeholder meeting yesterday, that one thing that's different from the bills as passed by on the floor is that we, in the Environment and Energy Natural Resources Budget Conference Committee, we had a proposal for a renewable manufacturing emerging technology grants. And in the House stimulus bill, they had a $1.5 million set aside for the IREDI program establishment at Mankato State University for emerging renewable technologies. They were both passed by the full bodies of the House and Senate, and we ended up swapping them. That was an agreement made in the Budget Conference Committee to put the Emerging Renewable Technologies grant into this bill because we funded the IREDI program at Mankato State in the budget bill, which is now sitting on the governor's desk. So that swap has happened, and so the Emerging Renewable Technologies grant is supposed to be... It's on... Oh, it is in here, but it's only on one side. It's supposed to be on both sides, so whatever. Just wanted to point that out. It's on R12. We'll get to that as we go through the side-by-side. And so that's something that has been agreed to by the House and the Senate. All right. So we're going to our plan for today is to go through the side-by-side with our staff. And then we're going to take testimony starting with the Department of Commerce's Office of Energy Security. And I've asked them to be very detailed and go through the language specifically and give us specific recommendations, thumbs up and thumbs down, issues that they can point out so members can see those. The House is scheduled for session at 9:30, but we understand that they're just going to go in and briefly in recess, so we intend to work through that. And then the Senate is scheduled for session at 12, and we'll probably recess around then. We just have to take a few roll call votes, and then I think I would ask members to come back If there's just some general orders, I would like the conference committee to continue meeting. The House may have to go in later in the morning to do some business as well. So we'll have to play it by ear, members, and we'll keep you posted. But what we'd like to do is meet for as much of today as possible and make as much progress on this bill as possible. And then our self-imposed deadline that Representative Kalin and I have reached is by the end of tomorrow, we want this bill done so we can move forward. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I look forward to working with you. To the point of trying to finish up from tomorrow, by tomorrow, do you know, will we have direction from the governor's office as far as, are we hopeful that he signs the environment bill by tomorrow so we can feel relatively safe about not having to have that part in this bill?
That's a good point, Representative McNamara. We sent it to him Monday night, and so he has until Wednesday night, which is tonight. That's good, to decide whether to sign or veto.
Thursday night, 3 days. That's
three full days, yeah. Not 3 24-hour periods. Okay, so I'm hoping, okay, well, let's, if he's listening, it would be helpful if he could make a decision before Thursday night. Yeah, we need to know. We need to have some clarity to make sure that that item appears in the bill, absolutely, before we close this. So I think that's a very good
point. Well, Madam Chair, today is Rural Radio Day at the Capitol, and they're in the governor's the reception room, and so he's on the radio at the moment. He's not listening.
Well, maybe someone could send him a little note. Representative Kalin.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, it's Mr. Marbles, through passing along the secret of the orb. Representative McNamara, if you might be able to put in a good word to the governor, I think that would be helpful as well, because there are really important provisions in the finance bill that help us balance the budget and get a lot of good things done. So just want to put in that plug when we get a chance. If you need a few moments to be able to sneak up to speak with him personally, we'll be sure to grant you that opportunity.
All right, let's get started with the side-by-side, and we're going to ask our respective councils to go through it. Was there a question? All right. And this room is getting full.
Sure.
I don't think we're being televised today, unfortunately. Or does anyone know? Yeah.
So they were this morning about the captioning bill.
I'm really appreciative of the amount of interest in this bill. We'll just have to try to take turns with the spectator seats, and we got the biggest room we could get today. So thank you all for your patience. All right, who's going to start? Mr. Fuller, Ms. Doyle, Mr. Eloff.
Why don't we just go through page by page, and when it's your side, you start, and then we'll flip over to our side.
Sounds good. Chairs and members, you have the side-by-side, R1. I think one preliminary comment is that the appropriations, I think there's a separate spreadsheet document in there. They're stated in different parts of the bill, so I think we'll deal with those later as a spreadsheet, unless, is that all right, Mr. Chair? Did you want to go through the language first? Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Mr. Fuller, I think the language first,
okay.
Please.
So in general, well, we'll start. Both bills deal with the stimulus money for three programs. The amounts are in agreement or will be in agreement. There's weatherization, state energy plan, and there's a block grants. And it looks like the first language appears on the House side, Mr. Eloff, on page 2.
Right, Article 1 of the House bill, Subdivision 1, contains some definitions. Subdivision 2 sets forth a number of allocation and use goals that are to be abided by in this act. Things like job retention and creation obviously being an important part of this since the money is coming for reinvestment. Improved energy efficiency, of course, coordinating and leveraging with other resources, et cetera. On page R3, section 2 of the House language with respect to legislative review requires the Office of Energy Security, before it begins expending any monies, to submit to the chairs and ranking minority members of the appropriate committees with jurisdiction over energy policy and finance what criteria it proposes to use in order to rank the programs on which in which money is to be allocated. And the chairs and ranking minority members are to give their comments back to the department, which are to consider them before establishing final allocation criteria. The OES is also to report, submit a report on the amount of stimulus funds allocated to each program to those same committee chairs and ranking members. Back to you on R4.
Madam Chair, the bills are set up a little differently, so when the side-by-side may not later on we'll find that the Senate may have some things that maybe have done the same things the House did somewhere else and vice versa, but I don't think we'll jump around. We'll just go straight through. So the first item on R4 is the weatherization, and what the Senate does and the House does to some extent is they give direction, and it's very dense. Every sentence basically has meaning, so it's hard to summarize. Almost should say read it, but because they're not each sentence almost contains a different thought. So, but I'll just highlight some of it. So with respect to weatherization, I think the thought is to use the current providers, I think both fields, to the extent that that's feasible and workable. There's a list of directions to the Commissioner of Commerce with respect to types of weatherization, such as in shelters and rental. And I'm looking at the block that starts on 2.15. Programs that include solar heat there should be included. On 2.29, the commissioner shall give priority to high consumption households and to serving the largest number of new weatherization clients. So as you'll see throughout the bill, the tension is between flexibility and direction. So here we're giving some direction with respect to that money. And then on the bottom, that we suggest a variety of strategies to use to accommodate the weatherization. And I think just going on to R5 with respect to weatherization, there's a direction to deal with foreclosed houses, to seek a waiver from the federal government if the house will be occupied by the appropriate qualified person. So as you see as we go through, well, that's our weatherization direction. So the Senate provides for weatherization, has a number of directions with respect to the program.
And again, on R4, I think the House language with respect to weatherization has a lot of the same ideas, if not the same language, and maybe just a little less prescriptive than the Senate language. There's also an emphasis on existing providers of weatherization services being fully utilized before new providers are found. There's also direction to include rental units in the program and also to develop procedures to increase low-income rental unit participation in the program. And as in the Senate, the House language states that priority must be given to serving the largest number of new weatherization clients. On page R5, subdivisions 3 and 4 of that section were amendments that were added on the House floor. Subdivision 3 requiring background checks of employees who are conducting weatherization activities funded under this law, and Subdivision 4 prohibiting employment of any individual convicted of a violent crime or a crime against property to be hired to conduct weatherization activities. At the bottom of page 5, page R5, section 3 is the state energy program appropriation. $12 million for residential energy financing programs. And just going to the top of R6, specifically mentions that the Office of Energy Security shall coordinate with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to use the stimulus funds in conjunction with its current existing financing programs to improve energy efficiency in dwellings.
Madam Chair, going back to R5, in subdivision 3, the Senate bill by paragraph lays out various programs and assigns an appropriation to each. So you'll see on 3.17 on R5 that we're talking about residential energy, which Mr. Eloff just discussed. And the Senate has, on moving to page R6, has, I think, four directions. One, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to have an energy program just like, or somewhat similar to the House with a little more language. Then we have direction to use it. This is all with respect to residential energy programs. On 4.1, the commissioner may use a variety of strategies. And then and without limitation, these are not a limitation. They're part of a larger strategy. Neighborhood saturation, which is the thought that when you hit a neighborhood, there could be efficiencies if you do more in an area than if you do less. On 4.12, then a quick fix component where you go in and do less than a more comprehensive one. And then on 4.18, authorization for direct rebates. And then on 4.27, a window repair replacement contracts provision that suggests that preference be given to Minnesota products, which is a theme that's repeated several times later on in the bill. Not an absolute requirement, but a preference.
Madam Chair.
Representative Caitlin.
Just a question about the direct rebate language on 4.18. Madam Chair or Mr. Fuller, was the anticipation in the Senate or was the discussion about providing rebates in addition to utility-style rebates that are given under the SIP program, or there? I mean, it's broad and
Representative Kaler,
not specific language. So this,
you're looking at 4.18?
Yeah.
Well, the intention was to respond to the concern that a lot of homeowners are not in a position to take out loans for these kinds of energy improvements, even if they're low-interest loans, that especially in today's economy, even if they qualify, which many may not, given tightening restrictions on credit, and even if they're zero interest, many senators thought it was important to provide upfront rebates as an alternative way to finance energy efficiency improvements, or we didn't think homeowners would participate otherwise. So we thought there should be a mix of strategies for offering financing for homeowers.
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that I understand what you're talking
about.
This
would be in addition to utility rebates.
And these are?
And tax credits,
so
you know.
These are grants rather than rebates, so it's the upfront funding rather than Senator Dill paying for something and then getting reimbursed for it. We would be giving Senator Dill I want to make sure that I just understand what your intent was with that language. I don't want a larger discussion on it. I just had never really understood.
I think the idea was to have it be a direct share of the cost rather than a loan, and whether you do it upfront or afterwards, we really didn't discuss.
Okay.
So I think you could use the term grant or rebate interchangeably. That was what we did. So there wasn't a, you know, magic reason to say rebate.
Okay.
The idea was just to have
Thank
it
you.
Be a portion of the cost would be covered. And I think I heard Jeremy DeFebri talk about the idea, like when you buy a car, oftentimes when, you know, there's a lot of advertising for cars, they give you a choice, you know, buy down your interest rate or get a, you know, a, what do they call it, a rebate? Oftentimes is what they call it. And that sort of stuck in my mind as an option that it would be nice to offer for homeowners. All right. Go ahead, counsel, please. Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, continuing with residential energy on 5.7, there's an allocation of money for a program in the city of Duluth that must have some specific components. Paragraph C, school district and local government renewable energy. It's a program created elsewhere. You see there's $10 million devoted to it.
Madam Chair, just a structural question on the language in paragraph C in the bottom of R8. I can't remember. Has the school district and local government renewable energy grant program as proposed in those two two bills? I've never seen that language, and I haven't been around here forever, but it is later in the bill. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Okay, thank you.
So, Representative King, that language should probably be struck out.
Okay, yeah. I just...
yeah, I didn't even realize that was in here.
It's a mechanism for my eyes. I don't know
if you'll see members,
others have seen it.
You'll see the statutory language that goes with that later in this bill that sets up the renewable energy grant program. We'll get to that shortly.
Then there's language on 6-7 down to the bottom that requires notification of school districts and local governments if a 60 megawatt or larger wind project is being done in that locale. Then clause or paragraph D on the bottom of R8 is a project-specific grant of $100,000 for a grant to the city of Kennedy for conversion of a building, and I mean the language speaks for itself. For a grant to the city of Kennedy for the energy conversion of a former school building to use geothermal wind and solar energy and to house the Go Green Business Center. Mr. Eloff, we're on R9 on your side now.
Yeah, Article 3 of the House language contains renewable energy programs to which stimulus funds are allocated, and Section 1 is for a grant program where projects qualify as community-based energy development projects, essentially community-run projects. This was a provision that Representative Westrom brought us. You'll see on line 625 the maximum grant is $500,000 per project, and no more than two projects can receive such grants in a single county, and no more than one owner can participate in more than one project that receives a grant. There's also direction to award these grants geographically dispersed throughout the state.
And Mr. Eloff, how much money was suggested for this whole program?
It's part of the 12. The way the House organized it, it was $12 million for renewable energy, I think, totally. And this was lumped together with other renewable energy programs. So I don't think there was money specifically directed, or a ceiling specifically directed at this program. Turning to page R10 is a second renewable electric generation rebate program that is directed to homeowners or small businesses defined as those with 20 or fewer full-time employees. And this program allows owners to receive a rebate of either the lesser of $2,500 or 35% of the cost of the electric generation facility.
You know, I'm just going to point out that I think that should have been in the side-by-side opposite. There's a very similar Senate provision, and I'm guessing this is from the same bill,
and, Madam,
and it doesn't...
Madam Chair, if you look
here
at the language actually on R10, the Senate language and the House language actually line up quite closely. In fact, I think it was Senator Scogin and Representative
odd.
Eakin that had those bills.
It's kind of odd
the way it's
printed. So if you look on R10 to 11, you'll see the rest of the Senate language.
Mm-hmm.
All right, go ahead.
I would just point out that in the Senate language, that citation, 216B.164 subdivision 3, is specifying that these projects would be below 40 kilowatts. And the House doesn't really contain that, but they are supposed to be fairly small projects.
Mr. Eloff, that's the... Because we
I
didn't
see,
have that...
On the House, line 719 to 720, I think it says 40 kilowatts.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 40 kilowatts.
So that does match up.
Madam Chair?
Representative Kalin.
And Mr. Eloff, I just want to make sure I understand that the Senate, or Mr. Fuller, I guess, the line 6.28, the 216B.164 sub 3 language, is the net metering statute, net metering definition?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, in the stakeholder meeting you had yesterday in connection with, and I think Mr. Eloff has said we're pretty much the same, which is true on this issue, there was a discussion about definition of terms. And so you'll see in a number of places we talk about renewables And I think in particular there was some talk yesterday about whether or not the solar definition is appropriate. So I think we were told to be mindful that we may have to update some of our definitions and make sure that those definitions work for the people who are doing these projects, because in some instances they do not. And there may be projects that the conference committee would want to have authorized. So we did get testimony on the solar part of it, that our statutory definition, which we reference in the bill, may not be broad enough.
Well, Madam Chair, I want to make sure that we accurately describe the process, and this isn't a criticism, more that what we heard yesterday was input at the stakeholder meeting. It was a meeting that Senator Anderson called, and a few of us attended, but I just want to make sure that the public knows that there was no formal testimony. It was informal conversation from folks who've been engaged in parts of the bill to help us prepare and talk about some of the discussions in the same spirit. I just really want to make sure that the public understands that that we've had informal conversations over the course of months on this issue, and that today is the day for formal testimony. And this isn't a criticism, merely to make sure that we all understand that we are being transparent and accountable to the public as we put together this bill.
And that all decision-making happens in public.
Absolutely. There was no action taken, Madam Chair, with respect to anything. And there was no document that was there, no amendments made.
Right.
Yeah.
Just
no votes
general
taken.
Discussions. Right. Senator Kubley?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. In kind of in connection with what Mr. Fuller was saying, you know, I think with the smart grid technology that is out there that is currently being tested in, you know, out in Colorado, I understand. But, you know, there are enough pieces of that. I hope that we can draft something that doesn't kind of stand in the way of that or provide barriers to it, to its adoption here in Minnesota as well.
Senator Kubley, absolutely correct. We need to make sure we provide flexibility in this language so that it can encourage the newest technologies rather than create obstacles to those. That's really important. So we need to make sure as we move forward. And so, in some cases, I think we've identified a few glitches in places where we didn't necessarily do that in the regular bill, just mostly because of time constraints, and we just didn't focus on all of that as carefully as maybe we can do now. So I'm hoping we can be really clear. I want to just take a moment to recognize there's a large number of students here, carpentry and weatherization students that are here. Could you all stand up, those of you who are students? Apparently, they all have to get to class, so which is great. We don't want to stand in the way of you guys going to school and finishing your training and education. I just wanted to recognize that they're here, and they're doing carpentry and weatherization programming. They're skilled workers who are looking for good jobs and good opportunities and want to help build the green economy. And so to me, it's very inspiring that you're all here. I want to thank you for being here. And if you need to leave, we'll forgive you for leaving in the middle of the hearing. So thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. All right, let's continue, please.
Madam Chair, again, if you were on R11, and if you go to 7.16 and 7.17, again, that's a handy index. Look at those titles to the paragraphs, commercialization, industrial energy efficiency, and both there's a side-by-side match there, but they are different. The Senate has a grant program to local units of government and Port Authority, and quite a bit of detail about the things that can be done, where they can be done, and a list of objectives that should be achieved. It runs all the way over to the bottom of R12.
Madam Chair?
Representative Kalin.
Mr. Fuller, could you maybe walk through a little more? I think there's a lot in the Senate language on R11 and R12. Perhaps you could actually walk through how that $7 million is allocated and who might be eligible, because I think it's pretty dense language.
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, members, it is, which is why I didn't do it. But so let's walk through it. So, I mean, basically you have to read it because every sentence has meaning. For a grant, so this is the commercialization and industrial energy efficiency proposal from the Senate. You'll see there's $7 million. and it's for grants. And again, it's the Department of Commerce and the Office of Energy Security that is the administrative agency that is going to be doing this, who we're giving direction to. For grants to local government units and the Port Authority to develop and implement a program to provide for the design, financing, and installation of energy efficiency improvements in commercial facilities, industrial facilities, and facilities owned by community-based nonprofit organizations, which maybe would be referred to as institutional facilities. I mean, so that's the concept there. And they'd be this program, I think the thought is it could be run in partnership with a utility in the entire service territory of that utility. So if a Port Authority got a grant, their geographic reach could be the reach of the utilities program, which would be their service territory. Money may also be used to improve the energy efficiency of biofuel facilities and displace fossil fuel energy. This is the bottom of our
Mr. Fuller, level. I just point out it also, we also said there should be a revolving loan component to this.
Right. And that's the thought that, again, that you'll see in several places that the stimulus money is one-time money, and the thought being that maybe that money can persist through reuse. And, you know, that's the tension. Well, there was some testimony, there was some concern at one time whether that was an appropriate use of money, and my understanding of that is that it is.
Well, I think I've heard Mr. DeFebri say as recently as yesterday that there's not a prohibition on using it for revolving loan funds. I think probably there is a requirement that the money be spent or committed by September 2010, and so certainly the first round would have to get out, and then the good news is that it would come back if it was a revolving loan fund. So that's my thinking about how it would work, and we'll have to make sure that it can work that way.
Well, Madam Chair, yes, a better way to put it is if the conference committee decides to do it, they can.
Representative Kalin.
Well, Madam Chair, we heard, I believe it was from Director Glahn, and I'm not positive about that, but in Energy Committee very early on in one of the 4,692 committee hearings we heard on my bill, early on in the process that revolving loan funds were not allowed. And so I think we're going to want to be, and we actually then changed the bill significantly to address that concern. I think we'll want to hear that from Office of Energy Security first thing today,
mm-hmm.
because we
some ambiguity about
yes.
that. And we do need to get clarity.
Yeah. I will just say that a lot of our discussion in the House went to this question of leveraging and continuing forward as much as we can so that we turn $200 million into the maximum investment that we can. So I think you'll see a difference in the way that we try to do that because we heard early on that we couldn't use this tool. But
well,
I hope to get that clarified today.
Absolutely. We'll hear from the office next. And, as we try to use this money to build capacity and build infrastructure, it just would be such a shame to have it all sort of fall away in 18 months and not have it continue. All right. Go ahead. Mr. Fuller, were you done with? Well, we have a number of sort of eligible types of energy production that, well.
Madam Chair, I think the policy issue that the conference committee may want to reflect on is that when things are authorized, if it's intended that they be required or simply authorized. So when you say on either side that they may do something, sometimes you say without limitation or including. And so I think the administrator, that's something to keep in mind, that the intent of the conference committee be clearly expressed with respect to any particular item that's specified.
Well, and Mr. Fuller, I think clearly our intent was to make these different options eligible, but not to require them to mm-hmm. be funded. And so this would be a competitive grant program. But we did include Senator Kubley's idea from his bill to originally the proposal was about energy efficiency improvements in commercial industrial buildings. And we added nonprofits. And then we also, Senator Kubley's proposal was to add improvements to biofuel facilities specifically to try to displace their fossil fuel use and replace them with renewable energy. So that's sort of a spin-off from the original idea. And we also added eligibility for anaerobic digestion, biomass or other technologies, river water or geothermal, And those are all just other emerging technology ideas that we wanted to be possibly, you know, to be eligible for grants. But again, it would be up to Commerce to make that decision using a competitive process.
Madam Chair, on R12, that's correct. On line 8.4 to 8.6, that might be language that could use some discussion, where it says projects under this paragraph are subject to local approval. So,
and I honestly don't remember where that came from.
I think if there's local applications, I mean, it could mean the locality would have to be fine. If you're thinking of like a local bill needs, you know, ratification, and so yeah, it's unclear what that means.
Ms. Doyle?
Madam Chair, I believe that particular sentence was put in because of the river water project. There was some concern that perhaps not all party, not that this, that maybe that needed some local approval on that particular project.
So maybe we shouldn't make that requirement apply broadly to the whole program and just put it in the context of river water, which apparently is controversial in some cities, but not across the whole state. So we could maybe tweak that a little bit, not to limit it so much.
Madam Chair, then you'll see on 8.6 that there's a limit of 2% on administrative costs. And then on 8.9, there's an authorization for the recipients who may not, since these are governments, they may not otherwise have authority. And since local governments are creatures of limited authority, there's language in here letting them take actions necessary to implement the grant. And then there's a block of material starting on 8.18. Priority must be given to energy efficiency improvements that achieve the following objectives. And so that's 8.18, there's a priority. Then you'll see there's a number of objectives. Reduction in total energy use, energy costs, improvements in the economic competitiveness of facilities, and creation of retention of jobs at improved facilities. And again, this is the commercial industrial grants, so that's why that language is there. And then there's a reporting requirement to the next gen board on this section on lines 8 point on this paragraph.
And I think, Mr. Fuller, that was really intended just to apply to projects that were funded at biofuel facilities, so we could clarify that.
Madam Chair?
Representative Kaelin.
Did you have discussion? There's $7 million allocated to what is essentially two pages in your bill. Did you have discussion about how to allocate those funds within?
Representative Kaelin, not really. You know, the Port Authority of St. Paul came up with this program based on their great success in our city with working with some local industrial facilities to reduce their energy costs. But I thought it was important to make as much of this bill statewide and available, because we heard a lot of interest from other communities and other legislators about doing something similar in their communities. The original Port Authority bill would have applied to about half the state in XL's, all of XL's service territory. So I would think that should be a significant part of the program, because that's half the state, and then other cities would certainly be eligible to do this. But we didn't say that in the bill. We left it up to Commerce to sort of split the money up. But it's one of those, we did put a significant amount of money into it because, you know, I think this is probably the best mechanism in the whole bill to achieve energy savings, and that's really one of the big benchmarks for the stimulus dollars, and it's also a big job creator. And we can, you know, we did make an effort to, without pontificating too much longer here, to really focus on job creation and energy savings in our bill, and we did put some numbers together, as you did, I know, Representative Kaelin, and we should maybe bring that information to the conference committee just for information purposes, just at least to give us some, you know, it's all, some of it is guesswork, but it gives us some guidance about how many jobs we can expect to create and how much energy we can expect to save from different strategies that are discussed in these bills.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kaelin.
Thank you. I think the My question goes to, I think, a larger difference that is implicit, and I'll just make it explicit, between our two approaches.
Why don't we hear, should we hear the House approach first?
Well, no, I was about larger approaches, Madam mm-hmm. Chair, in the bill. And that is that we really made an effort to create a framework and allocate within sort of, you know, so commercial industrial building energy programs would have $5 million and to leave an open framework and really to defer to the Office of Energy Security. And then Mr. Eliff walked through the sort of advise and comment framework paradigm that we set up, where we wanted to continue that collaboration, knowing that a lot of the worthy projects still have not yet come forward, even to this point. And so I think as we'll continue to spend some time going through the side-by-side on the Senate language, because I think it's more prescriptive in choosing and selecting projects. And we really deferred to the Office of Energy Security to continue to allow the flexibility. And I think we'll have to find some middle ground there or some way of reconciling, as Mr. Fuller said, that tension between flexibility and specific direction. But I did want to have a chance to actually articulate why we made this decision, was really to allow the best projects to float to the top based on job creation and energy progress or energy savings according to the stimulus bill. I think we're going to have to continue that discussion about how we do that.
Representative Kalin, I don't disagree with you. I think there needs to be a combination of really good ideas that are tried and true that we know work, and new ideas that haven't emerged yet. And I think we need to give Commerce the ability to fund both of those. But I think in this case, we know the Port Authority proposal is one of those tried and true, really good ideas. And so I would encourage, but this doesn't say they have to get a certain amount of money. It just says this is a really good way to save energy and help businesses be more competitive. And so I think it's important to designate that as one of the uses, but I think we absolutely need to have flexibility for some new ideas to come forward that we don't know, haven't identified yet. So maybe we're not so far apart. Maybe could we have Mr. Eliff explain the House proposal that is comparable to ours?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's to be found on page R11 and R12. On lines 11, 17, and 18, you'll see that $5 million is allocated to grants for commercial industrial facilities for this program. And the program really directs the money for three types of uses. One is in commercial industrial buildings to install energy efficiency improvements, or also to use renewable energy sources to either generate electricity or to heat and cool the building. And the additional use of the money is to manufacturing renewable fuels from biomass, those fuels that are in solid form, to be used for use in industrial boilers. And
what's that about? Solid form? That is fairly prescriptive. Representative Kalin, what's that intended to be covering?
Mr. Eliff?
It is. I believe it essentially means a form of pellets that can be used for heating use in industrial boilers.
Okay. And is there a reason why you narrowed it down to that?
I believe
Eliff, a representative, Kim?
Well, Madam Chair, I think actually this lines up fairly well with the language in the Senate on 732 probably to the end of that, probably to the end of R11. I think to Senator Kubley's idea as well, to displace fossil fuel with biomass, with commercially available technologies. We had a lot of interest from Representative Junkie, Representative Dill. We have projects, the cellulosic projects around the state where we did the research the last couple of years, that have shown that densifying biomass is the most commercially viable opportunity.
Right. Yeah.
Senator Kubley.
Madam Chair and Representative Kalin, I think that's true. I think Mr. Eliff's analysis of that is accurate. I think some of the facilities that have tried to deal with biomass without it being, you know, condensed into the pelletized form, have found it pretty difficult to manage just handling the mass of it. And so, you know, palletizing is a way to deal with it that allows you to deal with the bulk of it in a way that that helps to move the product through the system. And so it's a process that needs to be done in order to facilitate the move to cellulosic.
But does that that doesn't incorporate anaerobic digestion necessarily? Biomass
no.
Gasification, I suppose, could be through pellets.
Madam Chair,
we just need to make sure our language isn't.
Madam Chair, I guess I don't think the gasification process would necessarily lend itself to condensation. It just, most of that is done in a way that allows the bulk to be handled, you know, so that the gas is captured from a larger source, you know, that doesn't require the condensation.
Madam Chair, just to the House language there on 914 and 15, and why we see it in that state and not with the additions that the Senate has added, we really didn't hear much more than the biomass proposals on our side, and so that's why I think you see that. We also made a decision to really pursue the most commercially available. And we heard over and over and over this, including for probably an hour on the House floor, the prescription against research, mm-hmm. and so wanting to really focus on commercially available technologies. And that's why you see the language we included.
And I forgot to wear my shovel today, but I'll wear it tomorrow. Yeah. That's what this is all about, shovel ready.
And for those of you playing bingo at home, that's the center square.
Shovel ready. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, good. And then I'll tell the story about my mom. Maybe she could have a square. Yeah, I always have to have a story or two about my mom because she gave me that. I'll tell you tomorrow.
Last Representative Hilty, where that square belongs.
Because Mother's Day is coming up. Yeah, I have to talk about her this time of year. Okay, where are we?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Fuller, well, did you finish?
R-12.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm
I just want to make sure I've... Okay. What about... on page R-12...
I was going to point that out, but...
Sludge. It's just some definitions of renewables that are eligible.
And Madam Chair...
Representative Kalin.
Looking at that section one last time reminds me that that's actually where the flexibility came in. As you'll see, one of the purposes on 9 and 12 and 13 on R11 was to use renewable energy sources for either generation or thermal for these commercial industrial facilities, and that's where you see the larger opportunity to use biomass that's readily available to do that, to use it as a generation or thermal source, thermal opportunity. That's on R-12, 929 to 932.
Representative Kalin, did you have any thought about prioritizing energy efficiency projects versus renewable projects in this section?
Madam Chair, actually, I don't think that we... I think we really felt like we wanted to continue to work with the department on finding that right balance between the two, with the real goal here of, as I believe is the goal of the stimulus bill, to retain and create jobs. And so looking at those businesses for whom becoming more energy efficient or producing sufficient energy of their own electricity or heat could make a difference between staying open or closing, or between keeping their existing workforce or expanding some. And I don't think that we made a conscious decision. Perhaps any of the House members involved in that discussion could pipe up if you have any specific memory of that. But I think we really were deferential to the department to allow them to put that test in about whether this is truly going to meet the stimulus purpose.
Madam Chair, I'm looking back at the stimulus goals on page R2, and that the way that one is written, it says improved energy efficiency and increased renewable energy production capacity, so it gave them equal weight there.
And I guess we should get a reminder about the federal law if it gives them equal weight, because I think you know, I don't think anybody supports renewable development more than I do. Well, we can all argue about that. We all support it a lot, okay? I'm not trying to. But I think in terms of saving energy, I think we're just going to get a lot more bang for the buck. And so we need to just think about that as we move through this process. And that's why, you know, overall our bill is focused on, I mean, the whole weatherization program is obviously about efficiency, energy efficiency. And that's $131 million out of our $200 million roughly. But out of the remaining money, a lot of the SEP program at least, which is the $54 million, we tried to divide it roughly two-thirds for efficiency and one-third for renewables, and just trying to put a little bit more priority on the spending for efficiency just because it's more cost-effective, but still emphasize renewable projects as well. All right. What's next?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Fuller.
It's the one that you talked about earlier on the bottom of R12, the grant program that you know more about probably than I do. You want to talk to? I don't know how much money is involved. It was in another bill, apparently, and it was moved to this bill.
Oh, this is
some
the
understanding.
Emerging Renewable Energy Industries Grant Program, and what I mentioned was kind of swapped out from the budget bill into the stimulus bill, and it should show up on both sides of the side-by-side, but the revisor's working on that just to make
well,
it clear.
Actually, Madam Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you. A couple of things on that. One is because the House, I believe, didn't ever see this bill, I don't know that if there was a bill introduced in the House, perhaps Mr. Pomeroy can
it wasn't a bill.
Confirm that.
It
okay.
It was an amendment.
You know, I think that it should not show up on the House language just because we, as we've discussed, that I have a couple of concerns about the specific language related to the definition of renewables, as we've talked about in other sections, and perhaps putting a cap on the grants so that we can maximize the impact around the state. But I do want to explicitly say to all members of the conference committee and to the public that that the exchange to make sure that the International Renewable Energy Technology Institute, the IREDI project at Mankato, which may not be eligible for stimulus dollars, in exchange for moving that into the finance bill to ensure that that gets funded, I did agree to fund this project $2 million in our final conference committee report.
And it's a substitute for your grant for IREDI, which is why I think it should appear on the House side, because this is an amendment to you're taking something out and putting this in instead. But we can, you know, it's just we just want to be clear that we swapped this and we have an agreement, and we can certainly talk about any tweaks to language. I'm open to that discussion, but I just don't, because I've made my end of the deal, and as I said, that bill sitting on the governor's desk, I never even saw the language before I agree to it. So I just want to clarify that, you know, we just need to be fair about it. Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the conferees of the Energy and Environment Committee for their flexibility in addressing that issue, and we'll certainly work diligently to meet the intent of that swap. So.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And the idea of this was you know, we've spent so much time talking about how to promote the development of renewable energy technologies, the market penetration of them, and energy efficiency technologies, and that's a lot of what this bill does. But we heard over and over during our Green Jobs Task Force discussions that we're just not doing enough to get the manufacturing base for those products in Minnesota. And I know a lot of you have worked on that in different ways. And so this is one of the few pieces that is focused on the supply side of that, the energy, the transformation to green technologies and energy. And it's a small, kind of a small step to put $2 million worth of grants out there, but it's really an important step, I think. And so we didn't put language in here. If you read the language, I don't want to read it right now either, but it's sort of, I think it lays out some pretty good criteria for the priorities that we'd like to see this used for. And we've talked about having it available for to give Commerce flexibility about the grants it may be appropriate to give maybe a large grant to a company that would create a lot of jobs. One example that I'm aware of, a couple of companies that would be that are ready to open up business in Minnesota, and I'm sure there's a lot more that I'm not aware of. You know, one is a solar manufacturing facility that would create a number, dozens of jobs. And another, I think, is a battery storage company that's looking to open up and hire several hundred good-paying or create several hundred good-paying manufacturing jobs. And so I think there needs to be some – the Commerce Department, we need to discuss about what would be the appropriate level of grants. But when you're – I think part of that criteria you should look at how many jobs are you going to create and how big of a bang for the buck would you get. So that's something we can sure talk about. All right. Some questions about that. What's the next provision? Senate side. Mr. Fuller?
Page R14, you'll see the headnote again. Paragraph G, energy efficiency and renewable energy outreach. And again, these are all spending money from the SEP grant that comes to the state, which was about a $55 million pot of money. So, and this is an outreach program, and it makes a grant to an organization. I think its acronym is CERTS. To engage in various public campaigns to advise and get feedback from the public on their participation and availability of energy efficiency programs.
Members, maybe I can add for the House members who probably haven't, for the most part, seen this proposal except in this bill. This was the idea here that was proposed by the CERTS teams, which are well established around the state. And is they are proposing to knock on doors of 2% of Minnesota households and to do outreach to try to get as many Minnesotans as possible aware of the opportunities that are presented by this stimulus money and by other financing opportunities. I mean, I keep telling people, my constituents, that if you ever wanted to weatherize your house, to insulate your house, to put in new windows, to put up a solar panel, now is the time. You know, we've never had so many financial incentives in place from the federal government, from the state government, and motivated utilities as we will in the next year or so. And so it seemed like a good investment to me to put the other piece that I think is important about this is that this money is all about – is all jobs. It's all about hiring people, training people to go out and make that community outreach contact. So it's a great way to get jobs in different communities, from big cities to small communities, hire people from those communities to do outreach to their neighbors. And so I was really excited about this idea. I think it would get us good bang for the buck. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, will we hear testimony from some of the utility companies? I'm hopeful that – I'm wondering, will they be able to reach out to all these folks to identify potentially – and I don't know what they can give us publicly as far as identifying homes that clearly by their utility use are in need of it. And I know we see a lot of things stuffed in the utility bills, but I'm wondering if we'll be able to reach a larger group. And will we hear testimony from those folks at some point?
Representative McNamara, I'd be happy to bring them if they're interested in testifying. It'd be great to get their input on that. And, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about just in the weatherization area. This is over 10 times the amount of weatherization money we normally get in a normal year. And normally Minnesota would weatherize about 4,000 homes. If you multiply that out, we should be able to reach tens of thousands of homes. And we have a great infrastructure with CAP agencies and other – and the commerce programs and utility programs to do that. But to magnify that so dramatically in such a short time, because these dollars have to be spent in order to meet the federal requirements, they have to get out and be put to use in 18 months, just seemed really important to add to the existing infrastructure that we have to make sure that we reach more people and let them know about the opportunities. Otherwise, I don't know that we'll be able to get the job done. And, you know, utilities, for example, have most of the energy savings that they've done, 95% of it, at least from Excel, is in commercial industrial customers. Only 5% is in residential And I think utilities have kind of struggled with how to do a better job at serving residential customers and to get cost-effective energy improvements because, you know, it's house by house by house. It's a lot easier to go to a business and put in a few million dollars worth of improvements, get a 25% or 30% energy savings, and you get immediate cost-effective, you know, return on that in big numbers that can help utilities meet their energy savings requirements. But homes have been a little harder, and so I think with these dollars, we have an opportunity to really increase our success in residential energy efficiency improvements. That's part of what this Duluth program is about, and we'll have testimony on that today, too.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Just a couple of things. One, I just want to note the time, and I think the House is likely to go back in around 10:45, so and I hope we can get the side-by-side done before we do that. The other, I just want, for the Senate's information, we did actually hear the CERT's census proposal in the Energy Committee.
Oh, good.
Did choose not to include it in our bill. Mm-hmm. And I think that Representative McNamara's question, I think, goes to the shared interest that I think that you and I have, and I hope that this whole conference has, which is how can we get the deepest penetration of impact of the stimulus dollars, especially with residential customers, and how can we make sure we're actually getting those results? And we chose deliberately to go a different route on outreach. And so we'll want to hear, I think, from...
What is your proposal for outreach then?
Well, we'll get there on the training outreach, I think, is more critical, and that as well as having a robust information center and other pieces that... And we'll see that through the bill, but I think we'll want to see some real... We'll want to hear the testimony.
Okay. Shall we move on?
Madam Chair, at the bottom of R14, it's, again, the SEP money, $7 million for solar energy installation. You turn the page over to R15, and you'll see that at least $3 million must be used for solar in the light rail central corridor in the Twin Cities. The remainder must be used for solar projects, including use of the solar rebate program. And then a contract for solar voltaic has several conditions added to it on, you'll see on lines 10.15 to 10.28. I'll go fast because you want to be out, right?
Yes, but I think.
Madam Chair, on 10.
But Mr. Fuller, but I want to say something, so.
Okay.
So sorry. I know we've been making a lot of comments, but I don't know. I think it's helpful for people to understand why we did things. We've had a lot of conversation about the need to broaden our solar language so it's not specifically just for photovoltaics and make it consistent throughout the bill. So that's something I think we will intend to do. That's all. Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, Bob.
Mr. Eloff.
Yes, Madam Chair. On page R15, Section 3 is a program that establish or awards grants to local units of government to pay for the installation of solar energy projects, both in public buildings and in school districts. And in line with your comments, Madam Chair, I noticed that the definition of solar, this is on R16, does include thermal, both air and water. So that's something we may want to bring into a number of sections in this bill.
Where was? Oh, I see.
Well, it lists it shows
language.
A reference, and I checked the reference. It includes both air and and water heating of solar. Another feature of this program is that it's requiring that essentially payback of solar thermal projects within 15 years and 20 years for photovoltaic devices.
Mr. Eloff, is this proposal just for solar?
This one is, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And on page R16, the unfortunately the in the middle of the page, lines 11.9 to 11.12, those amounts do not refer to this program. It refers to other programs. I think the reviser just didn't note that. This is again part of the $12 million for renewables that the House has allocated.
Mr. Fuller?
Madam Chair, on 10.29 on R16 is $13 million for government building renovations, references programs that we'll discuss later in the bill. 10.33 is evaluating energy efficiency, C822. That's OES Commerce to make grants. You'll see there are included can be a solar rating and certification program on 11.9. It looks like the IREDI, which was in 11.13, that can be, is that IREDI?
Yes.
Yeah, that should
yes.
be stricken.
Yep.
And then, so 11.13 to 11.20 is gone. 11.21 to 27 is Advanced Energy Efficiency Center, so they can make grants for that. So it's basically money to do energy-related activities of a more research and certification nature. Bob?
Yes, on page R17, Madam Chair, this is part of the general allocation language. Section 2 at the bottom of the page at this point, I think when we drafted the bill, we're estimating the amount of money that was coming from the federal government at about $10.6 million for the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Program. And as you can see at the very bottom of the page, about $6.5 million was allocated to energy efficiency grants to local governments. And on page R18, the balance, about $4.1 million down towards the bottom, for local governments and school district buildings, energy efficiency. And the paragraph at the top of the page on R18, Section 3, directs the Office of Energy Security to establish a grant program into local units of government to enhance energy efficiency. And these are the use of the conservation block grant. The conservation block grant funds can be used for the purposes listed there, planning, consultant services, energy audits, implementing energy-efficient building codes and inspection services, and street lighting, and also includes renewable energy devices deployed on public buildings. And that, I remember, that was specifically one of the things allowable under the federal law, as long as those devices are literally on the buildings.
Well, Mr. Fuller, maybe you can, I mean, to me it looks like the Senate language is very similar and it's just formatted differently, so I don't know if you could point out if there's any differences there.
Well, Madam Chair, on the block grant program, which is starting on 11.28 on R17, you'll see that the grants, there's money that Commerce is to pass through to local units of government, and the Senate made it explicit on 11.32, and maybe that these were for cities that didn't otherwise receive an allocation under the block grant program, which some larger cities and counties got money directly. And then on subdivision on 12.16 on R18, we have quite a bit of language about administrative costs. And that runs all the way to R20.
Are you going to describe it at all? I think a little more specificity would
Madam
be helpful.
Chair,
thank you.
You'll see on 12.20 that OES is directed to use no more than 5% of the federal grants authorized under the federal stimulus law for the cost of administering the programs funded by this act. So I assume that's the three programs plus maybe appliance. And then there's direction how they should use the money on 12.20, personnel costs for employees, 12.29, sort of grant administration applications, 13.1, Clause 3, education and training, 13.4, Clause 4, a telephone hotline and website, 13.12, Clause 5, job opportunity, job notifications, job efforts. On R20, then there's language that requires that contracts funded by this act must ensure that bidding contractors are qualified and participate in available apprentice and training programs. So if you'll see on 11.25, it does refer to the entire act. So it's not just the block grant program.
And just for clarification, briefly, members, we had put a 5% cap on administrative costs, knowing that the federal law allowed up to 10%, which was about $20 million. And my assumption was that that was related just to commerce. And so we had strong bipartisan support to have that limit in there, but I've since learned that a lot of this administrative dollar has to be passed through to the CAPS and other agencies. So we do need to make sure that they get the amount they need. And this limit doesn't just apply to commerce. And it seemed like $20 million for commerce staff was way, way too much money. So we need to get clarity on that, and we will when we hear from the office. Senator Prentner-Solin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I also have some concerns as we're going by the side-by-side as there's a lot of specificity in here, and I'm wondering if we add administrative costs by making so many requirements on the programs. It's something that we should probably pay attention to.
I think you'll see some kinds of these requirements on the House side as well, and we can certainly talk about that.
I hope you'll point those out.
I thought you said something about information.
Madam Chair, on R20, the Senate side, Section 4 establishes a school district and local government renewable energy grant program, competitive grant program administered by the Department of Commerce, in which the local governments and school districts can apply for grants, and there's criteria given. Those are for renewable energy systems. So again, you'll see on 14.1 and 14.8, we have a definition of what those are. And as we mentioned earlier, we should make sure that those are what you want.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kalin.
In walking through the side-by-side, and I think that there, because our bills were so differently structured, there's some places where they sometimes line up in two places. And I just want to point out that on R15, the House language, I think this is Representative Saylor's provision, is only solar, but for public buildings and schools. And I think that we'll want to take some time to actually compare these two provisions, the provision from the Senate and then the provision from Representative Saylor side by side, quite literally. And I don't know how we'll, if staff might be able to do that while we're on session. I think there are a couple of places where we might want to actually create section by section side by sides as well, so we can actually compare those pieces in addition to the whole bill. But I think there's a lot of overlap here.
I do too. And I guess the reviser's been under pretty serious time crunches and maybe didn't see those nuances.
Well, Madam Chair, and I just want to, again, I think staff is doing a great job. It's actually, I think that there really are some, truly some places. For instance, the staff decided to put our portion opposite your specific solar portion. So I think it's a very understandable decision.
Sure.
I think we'd be bellyaching if as we're going through the solar said, oh my gosh, there's solar in other pieces. So I think we'll just want to make sure as we go along that there are comparable pieces that we have a chance to look at those literally side by side in small sections.
Go ahead, Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, so with respect to the same program on R21, just point out on 14.35, there's a Minnesota product preference, and on 15.7, there are grant caps. And then it looks like maybe, Bob, we have the same. We have actually side-by-sides in R22. And, yes. I know that. But do you want to discuss yours, Bob?
Sure. Looking at the House language on R22, this is money that's been allocated to local government and school district building renovations. And it directs the Office of Energy Security to coordinate the stimulus funds allocated for those purposes with the local public building enhanced energy efficiency program, or PEBE, which was offered by Representative Kalin last year. It's essentially a program that allows lease purchase financing for energy efficiency improvements. The language here also specifies that the Office of Energy Security shall coordinate with the Department of Education to prioritize school district projects for funding in this section. And I think the Senate language has a little bit more specificity, which you might want to talk about.
Yeah, Madam Chair, so what's the difference between this and the other section we started? Well, one is renewable and the other is renovation, so just keep that in mind. It looks like the language, you know, we're talking about state buildings and local buildings in a number of sections, but the subject is different, so the earlier one. I think the major difference is that the Senate, with respect to these programs in R22, has a 25% cap of the total cost, so they, I don't know, does the House have that?
I don't think so.
Madam Chair, Mr. Fuller, we actually had a 40% opportunity early on, and then at the request of the Office of Energy Security, we removed any specific language because they believe that there may be projects where 5% of a project's cost would actually be enough to get them to do it, as opposed to maybe a more cash-strapped school district or local unit of government where they met every other test, including that the building isn't likely not to be school building is likely not to be closed in the next few years because of other factors, that a cash-strapped district might deserve more funding based on job creation and energy savings
so
under the stimulus.
In some cases, you wanted more than 25%? Is that what
you're saying? Well, we actually walked through this repeatedly with the Department of Commerce, and I think it was Mr. DeFebri who specifically requested that we not put in a number thinking that if my school district were only given a 7 or 12% match of stimulus funds, that they might say, but look here, we can get to 25 in statute. And my experience is in designing things is that if you put a prescriptive, say, setback, that people are going to design to that number that's in the code rather than actually thinking it through.
I'm just trying to understand what you're saying, Representative Kalin, that your concern is that some places would want to use less and that you wanted to make that more likely to happen. I understand that. Are you also saying that in some cases they might need more than 25%?
Well, I think we should hear from when we get to the Office of Energy Security, I think we should hear their position on this because we really you know how happy I am to go along with everything the Pawlenty administration asks us to do, and so I just decided to do that in this case again.
Okay. I just want to know what the reasons are so we can ask the Office of Energy Security. That's fine.
Well, Madam Chair, I suppose that's the notion of whether this is gap financing and somebody has a skin in the game or whether you want a project to get done, you need 100%. So that's sort of a common issue that's run through these stimulus money discussions and other contexts. Should it be the last dollar in, the first dollar in, whatever?
Sure.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Eliff is reminding me to explain, I think that both of our provisions include the Public Building Enhanced Energy Efficiency Program, the tax-exempt lease purchase finance mechanism that Senator Dibble and I carried last year, that I know both you and Chair Pretner Solon were involved in on the Senate as well. And that's really kind of like the performance contracting where the energy savings over the years helps pay for the capital investment up front. And I hope the Office of Energy Security will, or Department of Administration will be able to explain this is a great opportunity to leverage those federal or the stimulus dollars into more and more activity. So hopefully they'll talk about that a little bit.
We had a lot of testimony about this in the policy committee as well. And, I guess we didn't hear any objection to that 25%. So we'll just have to talk about it.
Ready?
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, then on R23, an additional difference is that under the grant for renovating state buildings, you see that there's an authorization to make a grant to develop a system and procedure for setting energy reduction goals for state buildings, to automate utility bills and analyze and to develop a system for reporting monthly energy use relative to these goals.
Including individual metering in separate buildings.
Mm-hmm. Which would not otherwise be authorized, possibly.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Was that at the request of the Department of Administration that?
Well, it was Senator Dibble's language that he suggested, and I thought it was a good addition to the program. So that because we have the energy audits, but many of them are so whole fleets of buildings about, you know, what their energy usage is, and it makes sense to really drill down deeper and find out. That way we can make sure our money's being used wisely. I thought it was a good suggestion.
Madam Chair, I think we'll just, from the House, we'd never heard this provision as an amendment or a bill. So I think we'll just want to hear from the Department of Administration and from Department of Commerce about how that will work, what will be the energy savings, and also want to make sure that it's an eligible investment under the stimulus, because it might come too close to research. But we need to hear from the folks who are going to go to Department of Energy.
Yeah, I don't think this is a research issue, but we can certainly talk about it. This is about just measuring how much energy you're actually saving. And if we have to report energy savings to the federal government, this is a way to help us be able to do that. All right, Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, on R23 again, Section 7, as I recall, was put in early in the bill. I'm not sure it's necessary. I mean, if it is, it is. I mean, but it was at a time when there was uncertainty of what was going to unfold.
Okay.
So I guess that raises the issue, is there is some appliance money, and that's separate, and we should probably get some information on if we need to do anything with respect to that money. Then we both have, there's only a couple of minutes left, training and workforce development. Both sides have language. The activities and guidelines on the Senate side suggests a manner of doing. I think the thought is to try to use existing staff as much as possible within the programs, but then to set some criteria as who they should recruit, and basically some folks who are in categories of maybe unemployed construction workers, low-income women, that sort of thing, and then what they should train them for. And you'll see on lines 16.27, 16.31, we're talking about auditors and managers, energy managers. So we both have some language on there that I would assume could be fine-tuned if necessary. And then looks like it's the House has some language.
Yeah, Madam Chair, one additional difference I wanted to point out on this section is that the Senate language I think has Director of Office of Energy Security pretty much heading up the training efforts. There was considerable discussion about this in the House, and as you can see on line 420 on page R23, the language there indicates that the Department of Employment and Economic Development, in consultation with Energy Security and also the Office of Higher Education, would develop the training plan. So that's one thing we'll have to work out between us. Otherwise, Mr. Fuller is correct. Much of the language regarding recruitment, in particular communities, is replicated in both the House and Senate language.
Madam Chair, on R24, Section 9, the local units of government are beginning some money, and I think their association asked that there'd be some explicit language that OES would assist them with ideas about how to use that money. Section 10, again, it's just an authorization to units of government that they can do things, the state can do things to get stimulus money, just a safe harbor provision, and just in case that there was a lack of authority.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Kalin.
Thank you. I wonder, reading this for about the sixth time last night, you and I have never had a chance to actually talk about this provision, my understanding is that this would be for the competitive Department of Energy grants outside of the 196.7 that we're allocating.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
I think that it's issue.
I believe so. Representative Kalin, it also references MISO Statute Section 3.3005, which is a law that's been around for, I don't know, a while.
This is use of federal money.
It's the law that sets up the process for reporting federal grants to the legislature, and then the legislature can object to the spending, et cetera, et cetera. So that process just says should continue, just references that statute. Peter Watson, I think, suggested this language.
Madam Chair, without giving away the farm here, I think I'm very interested in this provision, and I'd like to hear from the Office of Energy Security and others about what we can do to position ourselves for those competitive grants that are outside of this $197 million, and if especially on energy efficiency. I know we may have a national opportunity there. So perhaps we could spend some time today talking, hearing some background on that and hopefully coming to a position on how to strengthen this language and really, I don't know what we need to do. I'd like to hear from Office of Energy Security on what they would recommend we do to better prepare us.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, well, Madam Chair and Representative Kalin, I think that's also true from the federal Department of Energy for the energy storage grants that there's dollars available there that are not included in this. So I think that's another area that that we should look at, the possibility of tapping into some of that for Minnesota.
And Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, I think you're exactly right. And one of the things that we heard from Van Jones, who's now the special advisor at the White House for Green Jobs, Enterprise, and Innovation, I think it's titled right, he said we can't use the term Green Jobs Czar, so something else, was that he's really looking to Minnesota as one of the five states best positioned to show our progress. And we know we had the Vice President here 2 or 3 months ago. I think that we have a real chance to be forward in these competitive grants if we can position ourselves through this bill better.
Representative Kalin. Oh, Senator Kubley.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, you know, just to add on to that, the, you know, the energy subdivision here in the Senate, Representative Kalin, held a hearing on energy storage. And I know the person from DOE mentioned that there would be fairly significant dollars available for energy storage. And I think it's you know, it's really an opportune time, I think, for us to take advantage of that. Great. And Xcel Energy, to their credit, has really, you know, led the way on energy storage by developing the first system in the state down at Laverne. And I think, you know, so they've got a little experience behind them, and maybe, you know, some of that could be followed up with another area in the state.
I think those are really important ideas, and I appreciate both of you bringing them up. I want to just sort of suggest we should limit the testimony, though, to the language in the bill and whether we need to tweak it to maximize their ability to get grants. At this point in time, this is a conference committee, and we got a lot of work to do. So I'm glad everyone's really excited about this idea, but I think we just need to figure out what language is needed to maximize those opportunities, and that's our charge in this conference committee. All right, let's continue.
Madam Chair, Section 11 on R25 addresses the issue of whether or not the Commissioner of Commerce has authority, or it authorizes the Commissioner to recognize activities that may be provoked or funded by the federal stimulus money in the context of looking at SIP plans. The thought that was early on in the bill, the thought was that there may be some changes that would make sense if there was an influx of money, and to ensure that the department had sufficient authority to modify and accept plans due to that fact. And then on both sides, we're sort of near the end, R25, the accountability reporting, this has to do with getting back to the legislature on activities and results under the programs funded by the stimulus money.
Mr. Eloff, do you want to point out any differences with the House on that?
Well, Madam Chair, when I got to page R25 and saw the first section that was actually the same, I was focusing on the similarities rather than the differences.
That makes our life
I'm sure you'll forgive me. But it is. I would just note that in the first paragraph there, we're talking about reporting quarterly there for a one-year period on all these activities. And otherwise, we're pretty much similar.
We have Madam slightly Chair. Different criteria. Who? Raise your hand. Representative Champion.
I've been sitting here listening and just making sure that I'm taking in all that's going on, and I think this is an important section as it leads me to ask you to take into consideration throughout the bill the plan around inclusion. And when I say the plan around inclusion, I'm talking about, you know, under training, I see that we have some specific language around training, but I didn't hear much about contracting opportunities for women and people of color when we think in terms of contracting. Or around workforce, I see workforce development, and I also think there should be also some consideration around inclusion and non-traditional strategies around outreach when we think in terms of of talking to low-income folks who may be eligible for weatherization. So when I think in terms of inclusion, I just sort of ask the committee to think about it from the perspective of training, contracting opportunities for firms of color as well as of women, and then of course that could also be looked at when we think in terms of media outlets, but also workforce. Who do we have in real time that's going to be on these projects? Why? Because it's going to help us in the future. We understand that the face of workforce and labor is going to change within the next 5 years, and it's changing even as we sit here. And so how do we be very strategic, and using your words, Madam Chair, when you say how do we get the biggest bang for our buck? The biggest bang for our buck is to intentionally, you know, think about inclusion in a way that's going to help us develop our workforce so that we are not only competing from a statewide basis, but also globally. How do we strategically position Minnesota in order to do that in real time, and not just a person, you know, as a laborer, but from ownership notions, from ingenuity, how do we think about it in its real context so that we are really stimulating not just our right now, but our future as well?
Great. Well, thank you for those comments, and I think that's an important principle to keep in mind as we go through this language. Make sure that we're articulating a way that these opportunities will be available to people. All right. I think Senate language is next.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Fuller.
The last Senate section, other than the effective date, is on R26, competitive energy activities. I think if you look at lines 19.3 to 19.7, the intent is that there is a lot of, there appears to be some opportunities to access federal money, and it requires, you know, expertise in grant writing, and the agency, OES in particular, has a lot of work right now. So it basically says the director can hire folks to help them in that process and advise them if they so wish, and should be on top of that issue.
Mr. Eloff?
Yeah, the last section here, Madam Chair, section 2 in the middle of the page, is allocating money to the Office of Energy Security, about $5 million, for a number of miscellaneous programs, working with teachers to include energy issues in K-12 curricula, developing training and certification programs for technicians installing and repairing both wind and solar energy systems, and also some internal upgrading of data systems so that they can help accurately track the energy savings that are going to result from the rest of this bill. We can report accurately back to the federal government as well.
Okay. If I just have a question about that section. First of all, I'm not sure how K-12 curriculum, as wonderful as it would be to incorporate energy issues, I'm not sure how that would be eligible for federal stimulus dollars. Mm-hmm. Did you have any discussion about that, Representative Kalin?
Madam Chair, again, I'm carrying the governor's water for him here. The Office of Energy Security provided us with this language. It's part of their recommendation. I think you saw the 5.022 or 5.1 million. And so we asked them to recommend to us what they needed to do, and I think this goes to a lot of the prescriptive language that you had in the Senate bill earlier on the, I'll find it, but on the administrative purposes and the information center, the outreach for local governments, et cetera. And so I think they had the K-12 curricula in there as an interest, and I think we'll have to hear from them what their interest was.
Okay, I'd be happy to hear that. I just don't know how that could be eligible for federal stimulus dollars, and maybe they can answer that question. Representative Breinert, am I saying it right? Breinert,
yes. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure of the exact section, but there's a coordination here, I think, between schools actually hosting energy projects and then the curriculum development, uh-huh. And that could be across reference for eligibility.
So. Okay, and we do have that language in our renewable energy grant program to require the schools to incorporate it into their educational components. So I suppose that makes sense, and that there is that connection. And maybe that's what they meant. We'll find out. And then the other piece is about the data systems, upgrading data systems to measure accurate tracking of energy savings. And I'm wondering if that's similar to what we were proposing for public building expenditures, or I'm not sure. I guess we can ask that unless you know the answer.
I think, Madam Chair, that's a more of an in-house
for Commerce itself,
for Office of Energy Security itself, and to do a lot of the aggregate. I believe that the metering, Senator Dibble's language, was an admin piece that I just know this by short conversation with him about this. And I believe that the data systems on R26 was related
internal
to really doing the reporting and also mm-hmm. more aggregate tracking for future research, measurement, and verification and future ongoing. Yes. So that there's data for future research, not research with stimulus dollars, to be to correct the record there.
Well, the Commerce will have to report to the feds about their energy savings, and so maybe they need this to be able to do that. I guess we'll have to ask that question. Members, I think we're completed with the spreadsheet. I just wanted to let people know the latest schedule we've heard from the House is that they won't reconvene till at least 11. So we'll keep you posted and try to keep going. Are there any other questions about the spreadsheet? And then, about the side-by-side, and then we'll move to the spreadsheet. If not, we'll let, since we don't have fiscal, we'll let our council go through that as well. Mr. Fuller, are you ready to?
Madam Chair, I wasn't expecting to do this. So which spreadsheet are you talking about?
Is there anyone who's prepared to talk about it?
No.
We don't have our fiscal analyst. I think it's pretty simple to just.
Is it this one, sir?
Well, this one shows. Well, this is the one the Senate prepared.
Yes.
This doesn't have the House, though.
Right.
This just has the Senate and the Office of Energy Security. So I think we should use the House spreadsheet, which has House, Senate, and Commerce compared. And the Commerce numbers, I'm presuming, are from their proposal. It's not. That's an evolving. Their numbers are evolving, from what I understand. So, members, maybe we could just read it. Maybe we should just.
Mr.
Eloff, do you want to?
Yeah, this was prepared by our fiscal analyst, Mr. Soderberg, who unfortunately is not here to explain it. But I was encouraged on seeing it because it makes us look not all that far apart at least on the numbers. Certainly, the weatherization numbers are very, very close. I'm not sure the reason for some of the differences. Unfortunately, I'm looking at the energy efficiency and conservation block grant numbers near the top of the page in the second batch of columns.
Do you want me to?
If you have additional information, please.
Madam Chair, I was going to call you Madam Speaker. I apologize for that. Mr. Eliff and members, we had a calculation error. Or a percentage error. We had believed that the split between the competitive grants and the essentially the grants that we could use between the competitive grants for local governments and the energy efficiency conservation block grant and the discretionary fund, we believe that 61.5% originally was could be used for competitive grants, and it's only 60%. We can use discretionary all the way up to 40. So redoing the numbers, I think on lines 2 and 3 in the EECBG comparison, I think all three provisions should line up. I think the House was in error.
Okay, so we'll just assume that those are going to be the same.
Yes.
That on the House column, it'll say 4258 instead of 4085 or whatever that is.
Correct.
All right, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Eloff.
Looking at the state energy program columns more towards the right of the page, I think one of the things this clearly shows is the numbers in brackets indicate specific projects for which the Senate has allocated money, many of which, all of which we discussed in going through the side-by-side. There are also some changes here at the bottom of that column. Obviously, the $1.5 million for IREDI should be deleted, and the $2 million for the emerging industries grants should be added, which will increase the House total by, I guess, $500,000. So it will be $54,672,000.
Well.
And, well, it'll change the Senate numbers as well.
Yeah, we'll have to reconcile that eventually.
Yeah.
We unfortunately, we can't just add another $500,000
in the House, right,
and get it from the federal government. But unless anybody knows anybody, please make that call today or tomorrow. It'll be great.
Mr. Elof.
And looking in the fourth column, just on the program totals, again, there's some differences on public building renovations. And it looks like about an additional $4 million. Well, additional $5 million in the House to those programs, whereas the Senate has $3 million more than the House for residential financing programs. And the Senate figures also have an additional $7 million for renewable energy programs. So there are some differences. And again, that 1,500 at the bottom should be deleted and replaced with the $2 million for the emerging industries.
Okay. And the House CNI Jobs Creation and Retention Program, I know, includes renewables and efficiency.
Yes.
And the Senate has some language for renewables in that, but it's listed as an efficiency program. I think that's the main focus of it. Mm. I'm not sure if there's other ones in these categories that sort of mix renewables and efficiency.
Madam Chair, where are you looking on the Senate allocation that mixes renewables and...
Well, the Senate has something called... industrial shared savings at $7 million. And that's the Port Authority-based program that we talked about. That's focused primarily on energy efficiency, but it also an eligible uses for biofuel facilities and hydro. And I'm comparing that with the CNI jobs creation and retention programs under the House for $5
million. So, Madam Chair,
I think those are somewhat comparable.
On that $7 million,
mm-hmm.
I had initially, when we walked through the language, I had initially understood that the $7 million was some for the Port Authority Shared Savings Project and some for other grants. Am I now hearing that thought was that it would be $7 million in one grants that would include?
It's Mr. Representative Kalin.
Yeah.
It's $7 million for the whole state. Of that, the Commerce should give... grants to different places, including, I would hope, the St. Paul Port Authority for their Excel program that would cover half the state. But it's not specified. It's not carved out. So it's $7 million for Minnesota for energy efficiency commercial industrial programs with some allowance for some biofuel facilities as well. Hope that answers your question.
I think it does and it doesn't. So we'll have to do some more work on language to understand better what that how that actually can be allocated.
Questions. Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, I can read these numbers just fine and dandy, but as long as we still have one-third or more of the paper that's not being used, I would suggest the next time this gets printed, it gets a little bit bigger.
Yeah, we're all getting into that large print generation, aren't we? Yeah. So thank you for pointing that out. All right, if there's no other questions, why don't we keep going and see if the Office of Energy Security is ready to come and talk to us. Yeah, we're going to ask the Housing Finance Agency to testify next if they're here, and I know they've been in and out, so just to alert them, but this could take a while, so just to talk about their role in this. Welcome to the committee. The conference committee. Is everyone coming up? Okay.
Madam Chair, if it were to please the committee, we could let admin go first because I think we're going to be some time with our
admin?
Discussion.
Is admin here?
Yes. I'm sorry.
MHFA? Yeah, that would be fine if they're ready, if there's someone here ready to testify.
Oh.
Theirs won't take very long.
Apparently, we lost her in the shuffle. Last time I looked, she was.
Yeah, I saw her coming in and out.
We
can always take a break if need be. So, who would like to speak? Mr. Glahn.
Madam Chair, my name is Bill Glahn. I am the director of the Minnesota Office of Energy Security, and a deputy commissioner of the Department of Commerce. And with me here today is the manager of the State Energy Office, Janet Streff, and operations supervisor, Jeremy DeFebri. So what I would like to do, if it pleases the committee, Madam Chair, is to go through the letter I wrote last week, just to give a high-level overview of our concerns with the bill.
Do you have a copy of that here? I'm not sure if all the conference committee members have read it.
I brought my own copy. Brought my own copy.
Is there someone who could get some copies made?
It was our intent to copy all of the members of the committee. If we... my apologies, Madam Chair. Apparently, we did not provide a copy to...
We'll get that copied right away.
So, again, my apologies to those members of the committee who did not receive it in advance.
Go ahead. You can still talk about it. We'll have copies shortly.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, last week we sent a letter to the folks who received it concerning our high-level concerns with the bill, some of our, I don't know how to characterize it, they're beyond just technical concerns with it or policy concerns with it, but concerns with how, to the extent it conformed with both the requirements of the ARRA and as well as requirements the Department of Energy has for these programs, and also in to the extent it allowed us to go through the process that's been set up and gave us the ability to successfully navigate that process. So these, I wouldn't characterize any of these concerns as policy concerns or technical concerns, and we didn't get to the specific language that we'll get to in a moment. But these are, what I tried to express in the letter was, here are our concerns where we think there are basic problems with the way the bills are in relation to what the stimulus law says, the federal law, and then the process the Department of Energy has for getting this stuff approved. So with that introduction, I would go through the various points of my letter.
Okay.
I overheard a little bit of discussion from the committee on the Minnesota product and bidder preference. Again, I want to say I would hope that our businesses would get all this. So I have a personal preference for seeing Minnesota businesses receive as much, if not all, of the business generated from this. We do have a concern, though, that by writing into the bill at the state level preferences for Minnesota companies and bidders, that we're going to run afoul of, and I don't know if it's characterized as law or regulation or exactly what the hang-up is, but it's our understanding that this would not be permissible as part of our state plan to have a state or local preference for written in. But maybe when we get to that section of the bill, we can hear a little bit more detail about that. But I also want to stay at a high level at this point. Our concern was, and Representative Kalin expressed this concern in a couple of contexts, was it's fairly clear, and I think we did provide a specific citation to the Code of Federal, to the CFR, the U.S. Code, about the research. About the research, about how you cannot spend money on research. And that problem was largely addressed by the solution in the budget bill where we found a different source of funding for the IREDI program and were able to successfully navigate it in that manner. And to the extent there are other items that would look to the Department of Energy like research items, we might have other concerns. But that was the one item that jumped out at us. Administrative cost, again, we'll get into that.
We'll get into that.
And again, there's no intention on the Department of Commerce or the Office of Energy Security to spend $20 million on us as a result of the stimulus bill. I mean, that would be several times over what our personnel and administrative costs are for our entire effort. But what we do want to make sure is that we have adequate funds to do not just paying our employees, paying the additional employees we intend to hire to implement this stimulus law, but also to do to pay the cap agencies and the other providers who receive funds under the umbrella of administrative costs. You know, that might be where the bucket they're put in, although perhaps that's poorly characterized as what those monies are for. In addition, I think Representative Kalin did express in describing the House version of the bill, did accurately describe our approach to the outreach efforts that Representative Champion was describing, that we wanted to do that under the umbrella of our administrative and training and education efforts. And so I'm sure we'll get to that later on, too. But I probably, in hindsight, regret having put this final bullet as the final bullet. In fact, I think it's the most important bullet on the whole page, which is flexibility. We are in uncharted waters in that over the years, the State Energy Office has been funded on amounts something under $1 million a year. So we've never had a program with this level of funding and this level of complexity, and keeping in mind it's all have to be done, as you were pointing out, Madam Chair, in the next 18 to 24 months. So we have a huge amount of funds that we all hope create lots of jobs, save lots of energy, but we're going through a process no one really has gone through before, either at the state level or the Department of Energy. The Department of Energy staff, they're great scientists, they're great researchers, they're perhaps not so experienced in grants and some of these other administrative efforts. So we're learning this for the first time. The federal level is learning it for the first time. So without reading the letter, we believe we need flexibility in whatever product comes out of this process to allow us, should the feds say no to a project or should some issue come up that we haven't anticipated and expressed to you folks that would either not allow us to do either they would ding our whole plan or parts of it, or as we go down range 6 months, a year from now, when we find out something isn't working as well as we had hoped, or put differently, something else is working much, much better than we had hoped, we would like to have some flexibility to shift monies around among these various items to try to go after what turned out to be the low-hanging fruit. And so we don't want to end up in a situation where we have all these specific buckets and we get to the end of this time period and good projects went wanting, but we had money left over because it was dedicated to a certain purpose. So we have language that we'd be happy to provide to the committee that we think would give us the flexibility that that would help us get to the to the end of this process, having big success all the way around. So those were the high-level concerns I expressed in the letter, and I did put in the caveat early on in the letter that we have lots of concerns and suggested improvements with additional provisions in the bill, and we're happy to go through that line by line if it pleases the committee.
All right, thank you, Mr. Glahn. We are going to want to go through it line by line. We're going to have to recess for a few minutes first to see if the House members are going to need to go check in. And so I think what I'd like to do is just recess for 10 minutes and see if they can come back, because they don't know yet. And then if they can come back, let's keep working till noon. But someone will give us the word in about 10 minutes. Can your question just wait till we get back?
Well, I think I'd just like to put something on record first.
Well, I think I have questions too,
okay.
But maybe we should just wait and take our recess now. And come back, reconvene in 10 minutes. At 11:15, we'll reconvene. The conference committee stands in recess.